Hey, it's Farnoosh, and if I had to go back to my 19-year-old self and share her my one big piece of financial wisdom that I've learned in these 25 years, it's this. You can't save your way to wealth. You can't save your way to a comfortable retirement. You have to invest your money. Luckily, I got started in my early 20s. I learned that lesson early on, and I want to share the wisdom. I want to share what I've learned over these last 20-plus years investing in the stock market. I don't pick stocks. I don't pay lots of money to work with experts, and I've amassed a seven-figure portfolio slow and steady. I'm teaching my very unsexy tricks on Monday, April 29th, live at 3 p.m. Eastern. Go to sowmoneyworkshop.com to learn more and save your spot. Go to sowmoneyworkshop.com and sign up for my investing masterclass. Even if you can't make it live, everyone who registers will get the recording.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money, episode 538, Emily Williams, success coach and entrepreneur.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
You're listening to So Money, everyone. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. Listen, raise your hand if you went through a quarter-life crisis. I won't tell anyone. I mean, I did. I went through one. It was more like a quarter-life, I don't know, hyperventilation slash nervous breakdown more than anything else. I'll set the stage. Okay, so I was in a movie theater with my brother, who at the time was probably maybe 12 or 13. Bless him. He had to witness this. He and I were watching the movie Big Fish. Remember that movie that kind of like nobody ever saw? It was directed by Tim Burton. Ewan McGregor was in it. Albert Finney, also known as Daddy Warbucks from Annie. Anyway, I'm sitting there and all of a sudden I can't breathe. I've got tears streaming down my face. And it wasn't because this was a particularly sad or awful movie. I just could not at that moment. And for many weeks, I could not get my mind off work. The fact that I was so stressed, the fact that I wasn't sleeping, the fact that my boss was a total monster, on and on and on. And I was also $30,000 in debt. I was making no money. I could have really used today's guest for help back then. So fast forward now, gosh, 10 years and change. We have success coach and entrepreneur Emily Williams here. Finally, she works with female entrepreneurs all over the world, helping them overcome their financial, emotional, and all other obstacles standing in their way. At one point, Emily herself had $30,000 in credit card debt and $90,000 in student loans. She had a meltdown in her 20s. And we'll talk about how she managed to turn things around for herself. And when she finally got on her feet and got this epiphany to launch her own coaching business, she went from making $442 in 1 month to hitting six figures by month six, and then growing it to seven figures in under 18 months. I'm intrigued. Here's Emily Williams. Emily Williams, welcome to So Money. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I mean, where do we even begin? Your business, right? I mean, seriously, you have a very successful, thriving business now. The backstory, somewhat of a zigzag from the debt to overcoming your quarter life crisis to suddenly making all this money in a year and a half. So I guess let's start with the beginning, which is you found yourself in what I think a lot of young millennials discover at some point, and I think I went through it as well, a quarter life crisis. A lot of it had to do with the debt that you had amassed, about 120 grand in debt, including student loans and credit card debt. Take us to that moment and kind of what your lowest point was like.
Yeah, I remember I had moved to London. I moved from Ohio to London on a whim, and that's a whole nother story. But I had moved to London to get this master's degree in nonfiction writing. And so I ended up with about 90 grand in student loan debt and then 30 grand of credit card debt. And I mean, I just had always had this feeling that I was meant to do something big in my life. But at that point, I started to wonder if it was ever going to actually happen. I felt like there was something wrong with me. I mean, I remember at one point, my parents came to visit me in London, and I just cried every single dinner when they asked me what I was doing with my life and what my plans were. I remember my dad wanting to like literally sit down and map out a plan with me, and I just had no idea. So it was just, it was a scary place to be in when I felt like in my gut, I could do some really great things. And I had all these aspirations, but I just couldn't pinpoint them.
You were overwhelmed. Did you always go through life as an overachiever, and suddenly you were kind of like released into the wild? I feel like a lot of times, you know, when you're in a structure like school or a job that is very kind of routine, you kind of know what your targets are and you can exceed them and it feels good. But when you're just unleashed in the real world, and in their case, a foreign country, you can feel very lost at sea quickly.
Exactly. Yeah. I'd been a 4.0 student, you know, straight A's all the time, thought I was going to go and get a master's in psychology, was literally driving to go to Northwestern in Chicago from Ohio. And I had this feeling in the pit of my stomach that it wasn't the right decision for me, and that I had kind of fallen into, just this in the box sort of mindset. And I realized that a master's in psychology wasn't my path, yet I didn't know what my path was. I just had to trust my gut and trust my heart. And that's what led me to London. But, you know, everyone thinks it's a glamorous move from Ohio to London. And in some ways it was, but I was super overwhelmed and confused about what my next steps were. That's for sure.
Plus it's raining all the time in London. Super depressing. The food is not that great. Sorry, London. And it's expensive to boot.
Yeah, I mean, my flat was the size of a closet, and I was paying, you know, at least $1,000.
It's not like how they make it out in Love Actually. You know, it's just like New York. You know, they like on Friends, these girls living in this massive apartment, like really a waitress and
totally. Well, supposedly it was rent controlled.
Yeah, but
I don't know.
Still, I mean, come on. So, what was your gut telling you? What was your heart telling you? And what did you ultimately do to get yourself out of that rut?
The easiest way for me to describe it is that I felt like I was meant for something big. And I don't know if you saw Oprah's, I believe it was called Live Your Best Life tour. But I went to one of her events, and I remember her sharing a story that really painted that picture as well. She said how she was growing up and her grandma used to tell her, you know, you need to learn how to clean the house. You need to learn how to make bread because that's what's in store for you. And she didn't talk back, but she essentially felt in her gut like, that's not what I'm doing. That's not what I'm meant for. And so I just felt like there was something else for me. And so I really just kept following little clues. And what I mean by that is if something piqued my interest, I would follow it. So for example, I was really excited about the potential of writing a book. So I decided to get a master's in nonfiction writing. Then there were certain other things that piqued my interest. Like I became a matchmaker for a bit. And I was interested in relationships and that dynamic. And so I just kept following these things. And then eventually my friend sent me Marie Forleo's website, who's very big in our industry. And that was this major aha moment for me. I realized that coaching was that something big I was meant for. And it really, I felt like Marie showed coaching in a way I'd never seen it. When I was growing up and my dad had coaches come to our house, they were in like business suits. They had their little three ring binders. And that wasn't the type of coach that Marie was. And so that was kind of even the moment that everything changed for me.
So what were you going to coach? How did you know what your calling was? I mean, coaching, and you might agree. I mean, I hear from other coaches too, that the industry is kind of gotten diluted, where everyone is calling themselves a coach. Breaking out in that marketplace can be very challenging. So for you, how did you identify your niche? What mm-hmm. was your expertise?
So I started off doing life coaching for women in a quarter life crisis. So Yeah, exactly. I felt like I had been through it, even if it had only been a few months before. And I just kind of went for it. You know, I can see what you're saying about the coaching industry, but I also believe that sometimes we wait until everything is perfect to get started. And I, you know, I've never been that way. I always just go for things. And I felt like, you know, even if there was one person I could help who had was in a quarter life crisis in that moment, or felt like things weren't going to happen for her, or was craving clarity that felt like it was never going to come, I felt like I had to at least try, had to at least put myself out there. And so that's where I started. And then as I got clients and started to actually build a business of my own, I started to see that there were a lot of women coming to me who, yes, were in quarter life crises, but they had dreams of something big, just like I did. And for them, that big was that online business and that life of, you know, that laptop lifestyle, so to speak. And so as I started to build my business and get more information about how to do that, then I started to share it with others and, you know, really gradually got into working with other entrepreneurs.
In a very short period of time, I understand that it was the summer of 2014. You made a little over $400 that month. And then 18 months later, you'd reached a million. What?
Yeah.
Can you bring that to life for me a little bit? I need to start taking notes here.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want anyone to think it was like I snapped my fingers. It definitely wasn't. I, again, just hit the ground running with everything. At one point, I had 27 one-on-one clients and was running two group programs. And I mean, I just went for it and I just put myself out there and I kept, you know, raising my prices and offering more a variety of different packages. And like I said, scaling by running group programs where I could reach more people. I created some info products so that people could purchase my programs and download them to complete in their own time. So I had a variety of different offerings, but I honestly was working probably around 100 hours a week for the first 6 months. And I had no social life. I mean, it was difficult. So I don't want anyone to think like it was an overnight. I mean, essentially, you know, it might feel like 18 months is an overnight thing, but I worked really, really hard.
Were you still in London at the time?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Wow. So were you marketing to the world, or was there all women in their quarter life crises, or, you know, whatever challenges, professional, career, financial, they were going through? Did you have international clients? Were they all virtual? I suppose so. That's the case, right?
Yeah, international, everything was done virtually. So yeah, I mean, Facebook ads completely transformed my bank accounts. I was able to reach, you know, everyone. Our main clients are in the US and the UK, you know, to this day. So I was able to reach a wide variety of people.
So when you say you put yourself out there, what were the out there's? Was it Facebook? Yeah. Was it your list? Like, how did you market yourself?
Yeah, definitely Facebook ads. I did some live trainings. I mean, I've always been a firm believer of being honest and vulnerable. And so from the beginning, I shared from the heart. I told people the story of my own quarter life crisis and things that I had been through. And I really believe that, you know, people want to feel like you get them. They want you to express your own journey and they want to be able to connect with your story. So that's what I did from the beginning, whether it was on some free training. So I recorded, there was one point where I had like 4 hours of this audio training that I did for for people. It was called Hot Mess to Mega Success. And I also have a book on that now. But it was, you know, I basically bared my soul in terms of what I had gone through and how I moved past it and how they could too. And so there was an element of me sharing my story and being vulnerable that I feel, you know, really helped build the brand and helped my followers get connected with me and supported them in feeling like I could help them.
You know, so much of a success in an online business, especially these days, has to do with marketing. And your background maybe in, did you have a background in psychology?
Yep, I have a degree.
Yeah, so yeah. That probably fueled a lot of your strategy, right? For understanding how to really get to people with your story. Authenticity matters, but also like how to really trigger them to click buy.
Yeah, I think that definitely played a part. I will have to give credit. You know, I invested quickly in my business. I invested with coaches that had come before me. And I felt really strongly, you know, there was a point where I felt like I could do it myself, but then I realized that wasn't exactly the fast path to success. So I invested with other coaches and, you know, people who knew about marketing and knew about Facebook ads and could support me in moving forward. So I wasn't playing that business guessing game. But yeah, I mean, definitely my psychology background. I've always been curious about the way people think. I've always been really heartfelt and wanted to connect with people on a deeper level versus that, you know, that surface relationship.
And you also, along the way, found your mate. So tell us a little bit about that partnership, because I know that you've credited that relationship for helping you and your business really thrive.
Yeah. So many women, I feel, you know, have the belief that they need to get their career in line and certain things, certain boxes ticked before they move forward with that romantic relationship. But I was actually the opposite. I grew up with parents who met when they were 15. They've been together ever since. They never dated anyone else. And they're still very much in love. And so I saw a really positive relationship as I was growing up. And so I always wanted that. I always, you know, just like I believed I was meant for something big career-wise, I felt like I was meant for something big relationship wise. And so when I got to London, that was also part of my mission. I basically serial online dated and met James. And, you know, as I built my business, he saw what I was doing and, you know, we had a great relationship. And it was around that time that he started to feel like, you know, maybe he was meant to do something bigger or maybe something different. And he had been in the design world for 12 years. And he, similar time to me, discovered coaching and started to look into it and got really interested in him in it himself and ended up leaving his job. It was about 10 months after I got my first client. So we kind of jumped into working together and we've been working together ever since.
And you said despite making more than him, he's cool with that.
He is. Yeah. He's so supportive. I talk a lot about Oprah, but just this came to mind. I remember her saying that her partner Stedman used to, you know, people used to ask, are you, you know, upset to be in Oprah's shadow? And she said, no, he feels like he's in the light. And I thought that was really beautiful.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah.
But I will say, I've heard Stedman speak and he, I believe would say the same thing, but he's also said in, you know, his speeches that when people come up to him and say like, oh, you're dating Oprah. And he's like, it does add a lot of pressure to you to be able to make sure that you get your bleep together, you know, like he, and so I think in, he's being very positive in saying that, you know, she's really motivated him to pursue his career and find his passion and find his thing. And maybe it's not to the financial success as Oprah Winfrey and the fame as Oprah Winfrey, but he is very much fulfilled in what he does. And he credits her for getting him kind of more focused and more pursuant of that. So that's a great partnership.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure James would say the same thing. I know he often says that my best and worst traits are that I never give up. But, he, you know, so there are times where I drive him crazy and me working 100 hours a week wasn't the easiest thing. But he's proud and it inspired him to go after his dreams, too. He didn't grow up in an entrepreneurial family like I did. And so it's kind of, you know, he feels like he has this second chapter and he's doing the thing that he was meant to do and is just you know, grateful that we're on the path together for sure.
That's great. Okay, let's talk money.
Okay.
And I want to talk about your money mantra. What's your financial philosophy, Emily?
I have a few, but one of the ones I wanted to share with you was this idea that kind of came out of my mouth accidentally, that you can either be scared or rich. And what I mean by that is not that when you have money that you're not scared, because, you know, I'm still scared of putting new programs out there or taking business risks or whatever, but you have to move past that fear in order to make money. So yeah, you can either be scared or rich. You can't like stay in that place of fear and expect to, you know, get the raise, get the new job, you know, start the business, whatever that goal may be.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me. Until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a AA or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. I do think that we've talked about on the show in the past that particularly with women, there is this fear of owning it and owning more of it. There is this masculine energy around wealth and rich and power. I think we correlate rich with power, and sometimes that power is not, it doesn't speak to us, but, you know, redefining and reframing what power means to you as a woman and then making sure that, you know, you earn as much as you can, as much as you want to achieve that power, the power to heal, to help, to give back. These are the powerful definitions that do motivate women. And so for me, that was the big kind of transition, because I think I was in a place of fear. I don't know, it was fear, it was so much like complacency, you know, like, I'm okay. Yeah. I don't really need to be making more. Life's good. But it was a female wealth coach that actually shook me and woke me up to the fact that, no, you can earn more. You should earn more. The world will depend on it, because when women make more, the world becomes a better place.
I love that.
And then I heard that and I was like, all right, it's not about me. It's about the world.
It's not about you.
The world becoming a better place. I'm so glad that this is something that you teach your clients as well, because that's such a, it goes hand in hand with running a business.
Exactly. And, you know, I really love what you said about the world becoming a better place, because that's often the motivation for my clients. Although, you know, I admit that they want the laptop lifestyle, they want to travel, they want the financial freedom for their own personal desires. They do have a desire to give back, whether it's the charity or giving. I remember being so motivated by being able to spend more than $50 for Christmas on my family's gifts. You know, there was such a restriction there when obviously I was in debt and didn't have money to give back or be generous with family and friends. And so that's part of my motivation as well as my clients' motivation. And oftentimes they do want to change the world. They want to have a big impact. They want to start the charity or, you know, whatever that goal is. So it's definitely not just about us. It's about so much more than that and our purpose.
When you paid off your debt, did you do anything to celebrate? Do you remember that moment?
So funny that you asked me that. I was talking to someone about this the other day. I had built up such a, I had such an issue over my debt for so many years, and I felt so bad about it, despite the fact that I, you know, had invested all this money in my education. It wasn't like I went out and blew it on something that I regretted. And so, you know, I had this big hang up around it. And then when I paid it off, like, I don't even actually remember that moment. It ended up not being that big of a deal. And, you know, in my mind, I had thought it was going to take me forever to pay it off. And I'll be honest with you, in the beginning of my business, I chose not to pay off my student loan debt straight away, because I wanted to invest in my business to grow it quicker. And I know that might not be what financial advisors will say, but in my mind, it made far more sense for me to invest in working with a coach or something that would drive my business forward much faster than like chucking away at my student loan debt and not having any money to invest in my business.
I would agree with that. I mean, as long as you're making the minimum payments,
right,
you're not getting behind, investing in yourself and a business year over year will grow exponentially more than the 6-7% that you're paying towards that loan. So I mean, I think it makes financial sense. It can also make a lot of life sense.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was kind of my, I had to really release like any debt shame. That's what I like to call it, because it was holding me back for a long time.
What was your biggest failure financially?
You know, I really have a hard time with this question, because I don't like to regret any of my financial decisions. You know, I feel like I don't even use the word debt in my conversations with my clients. I call it investment. So I've had to, like, you know, I really have retrained my thinking around that. So to be honest with you, I don't have any regrets around that.
But I didn't say regret. I said failure.
Okay.
Which, you know, failing is not regretful. Failing is part of life. And sometimes we are thankful for our failures.
Financial failures, though, I don't feel like I've had any financial failures. I've had business failures for sure. Mm-hmm. I've made decisions, you know, I tried to do everything myself in the beginning, and that was probably tied to like really trying to hold on to my money and not pay anyone to help me with my 100 hours of work and trying to do everything myself. So I definitely regret and have, you know, the belief that people should outsource as soon as they can, at least, you know, to someone who can help with their emails. So that would be my main thing. And again, like in the beginning, trying to do it all on my own without a coach, that was something I wish I would have invested in sooner. But other than that, you know, I am grateful for everything that's happened, and feel like they've all, you know, everything that's happened has been a lesson or has been part of my journey.
You mentioned that paying off the debt wasn't this like, you know, it was sort of anticlimactic, I suppose. It happened, but it wasn't, you know, this like huge, like the, you know, the earth shook or anything like that. But was there a so money moment in your transition from the quarter life crisis to becoming an entrepreneur, you know, a moment where you just felt so proud of your financial self?
Yeah. So when I hit my 7-figure mark, you know, my original goal was to hit 6 figures before my 30th birthday. That was always my goal. And there was a period of time where I thought, you know, it might not happen. I'm making $30,000 a year as a matchmaker. So how am I going to hit that 6 figures? And then, you know, I ended up hitting 6 figures within 6 months of my business, and then went on to make 7 figures. And my husband and I had taken a trip to Vail, Colorado with some friends, and we ended up staying an additional 2 weeks because we loved it there. And to be able to do that, you know, not just from a financial perspective, but from a time perspective, neither of us had jobs to go back to. We were able to just decide to stay. That was a really proud moment for me.
You mentioned way earlier that you were, you know, in London, your parents came to visit. Sounds like you have a supportive family. And yes. So take us back to childhood a little bit and share with us maybe a memory of learning about money or a financial experience, even though at the time you may not have thought of it as that, but it really was.
Yeah. My dad said that my first word was money, which I never realized.
No he told way. Me that.
That's what he said. Yeah. So we'll have to, I don't know why he thinks that. I thought we'll it was mom check or that. Something. Yeah, we'll have to fact check that one.
Maybe it was mommy.
Yeah, mommy. but we were laughing about that the other day. My family is super supportive. My mom is actually a part of some of my programs. Like, she loves being a part of it. And my dad has been an entrepreneur, since in his 20s. But I do remember one of my favorite uncles telling me that it was just as easy to marry a rich man as it was to marry a poor man. And I knew what he was trying to say, like marry rich and be taken care of. But again, I felt like, I'm smart. I can do something. I don't need to depend on a man. And there was like that whole independent woman thing.
I would beg to differ with the with the gap in wealth in this country. There are fewer rich people than there are, poor people. But anyway.
Agreed. Yeah.
Back to your dad.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he told me that when I was like 13 or something and starting to date and all that good stuff. So yeah, so I had that uncle that shared that with me. But that was never, the way that I grew up thinking. I knew that I wanted to do big things and I didn't need to marry someone in order to have the life that I wanted. But yeah, that just stands out in my mind to this day.
I had a kind of similar experience, although it wasn't blatantly told to me like, you should marry well, or marrying a rich guy is going to make your life easier. I did feel that was like a subtle message that I got. But all I saw around me were women who were beholden to their husbands' bank accounts as a result of that. And it was a sad existence, to not be able to have your own money, which to me, I figured that out really soon, that having your own money means personal financial freedom and personal freedom. What I was being maybe whispered was not what I was actually seeing and witnessing. The fact that, marry well, your life will be great. Is it really though? Because there were fights. They just didn't really seem like they were getting along. They didn't really understand each other. The wives did not have that independence that I really craved as an adult woman. So,
I agree completely. Being able to make your decisions based on your finances, not having to rely on someone else or ask permission for things, that wasn't something I envisioned in my future either.
All right, let's talk about habits and then we'll get to the fill in the blanks. But what's a financial habit that you practice regularly? And I'm sure as a coach, you have some go-to practices for yourself.
Yeah, definitely. So one of them is looking at my bank account every single day. I remember a few years ago when I didn't have a good relationship with my bank account, I would like had my hands over my face, not wanting to look at it because it was not a pretty sight. I read a book, I believe it was Kate Northrup in Money, a Love Story. And she talked about the fact that, your relationship with your bank account, it is a relationship. And so to start to be grateful for the things that you can pay off even now, whether it's, just the rent or just the bills that you have to pay, start to retrain your mind to have a positive relationship with money. So I started to look at my bank account every day after that. And I still do to this day, so much to the point of if there are days where I don't look at it, this happened a few months ago when I was at an event. It started to feel weird, almost like I missed my bank account, which feels very strange to admit. But that's kind of, I've gotten into that routine. And so when people tell me that they don't look at their bank accounts or someone else deals with it, for me, that feels a bit odd because I'm very much, involved with my finances. And I think that's really important.
I mean, could you imagine going through your days without looking at your partner or speaking to your partner?
Exactly.
That deteriorates the relationship. And so I think with money, you have to always have that connection, whether it's looking at your numbers, being conscious of your money somehow, some way, every day, having that touch point is so important. And I love Kate Northrup. She's been on the show and she's a friend and she's fantastic. So
she is amazing. I love her too.
Her advice is solid. All right. Let's do some so money fill in the blanks and then I'll let you get back to your seven figure life and your lovely husband. Are you guys married?
Yep, we're married.
All right. Lovely husband. Yeah. Life is good. All right. Tell me this. If I won the lottery tomorrow, are you still in London, by the way?
We're in San Diego right now. Okay. We just came from Colorado to San Diego. Yeah.
Are you guys just, you just hopscotch all over the world, or?
We travel a lot. This week we're here for a mastermind. And we were just in Vail for 10 days skiing again, because we fell in love with it.
Oh, how nice. What's home? Yeah. What's home base?
Yeah. London's home for
London's
us.
London's home. Okay. Yeah. All right. If I won the lottery tomorrow, let's say $100 million, the first thing I would do is?
I would buy a house in Vail, Colorado.
Yes.
We just visited a few of them while we were there just for fun, and they're amazing.
I've never been skiing out west, so that's a goal.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. I would do that. I would expand iHeartMyLife, so my business. We just launched a stationery line as well, so I would do more with that, with some products, with team, with events. And I would give a lot to family and friends, and do some charitable work as well.
A stationery line. Go you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Busy. I love keeping busy. One thing I spend on that makes my life easier or better is?
Oh, people. So team and help around the house. I mean, that was getting a cleaner was the first thing I invested in, and I'm never going back.
Oh my gosh. I used to have my cleaner come every week for a while. Uh-huh. I was like, this is ridiculous. Let's do every other week. But now I'm thinking every week, because you know what? Dust accumulates in a New York apartment, and now we're going to be a family of four. And I'm like a really pregnant right now. So there is not even any like upkeep that's happening.
No, I think once a week would be good for you.
Yeah.
I agree.
Okay. My biggest splurge, like something really just guilty pleasure that you love to buy, spend on occasionally. It's not the cheapest, but you know what? You don't care.
Shoes.
Shoes.
Yeah, shoes. And my home.
And your phone?
My home.
Your home. House. Okay, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love designer shoes, Christian Louboutin. I know they're not practical. I know I can barely walk in them, but they're beautiful.
They're not. They're all, it's not practical. They're only beautiful. They were not meant to be worn on the feet.
No, they weren't.
They were meant to be sitting in your closet, photographed.
Taxi shoes.
I mean, I bought a pair of sandals, which are great, from Louboutin. Like, I treated myself one summer, and I was in Vegas, and I wasn't gambling. So I was like, I'll just, instead of putting my money down the slot machine, I will, you know, buy a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
So that's how I rationalized that. Then I bought a pair of heels when I was pregnant, because it was the only thing that would fit me at the time. Like shoes, you know, because but only for a limited time when you're pregnant, because then your whole body just swells like after the second trimester. So I bought these shoes. I wore them once. They were super uncomfortable. I ended up selling them on tradesy.com and making a lot of my money back. So that was great. But I'm not doing that again. I live in New York too. If I go outside, they will get eaten up by the streets.
I know.
So I have to just be in my house with my shoes on. Everyone will just have to come here to see me wearing the shoes.
See them. Oh, that's so funny. Anyway. I know. It's not practical, but I can't help it.
They photograph so well.
Yeah, they do.
All right. When I was growing up, the one thing I wish I had learned about money, besides the fact that men won't buy your happiness, is
that creating wealth is unlimited, and that money mindset is something everyone should learn growing up. I don't know why they don't teach it in school. I don't know why they don't teach certain mindset techniques in school to begin with. But yeah, money mindset is one of my passions, and I'm looking to get that work out into the world, not just for entrepreneurs, but for everyone.
I don't know why they don't teach it in schools. I mean, there are studies that show that maybe it just isn't something that sticks. But what, you know, I don't remember much of my curriculum in high school and middle school, but yet they still taught it. So it's just not a priority.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I remember a coach telling me that I have the power over my thinking, and that positive thoughts, you know, can change my reality. And I believe that, but I never learned that. I had to learn that at 25, and I wish I would have learned it a long time ago and could have seen a lot of faster growth.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right. When I donate, I like to give to blank because
friends and family. My mom is a huge giver, and so I have that spirit. I love giving gifts. I love being able to help friends and family. So definitely friends and family.
And last but not least, I'm Emily Williams. I'm so money because
I overcame my money fears and blocks and hit 7 figures in my first 18 months in business and help others do the same.
That's like so money to the fourth degree. That's awesome. Thank you so much, Emily. Congratulations. Safe travels as you explore the world, go back to Vail, do a little maybe sunny time in San Diego. Life is good. I wish I was in your shoes. I will be someday. I'm just, I got to deliver a baby first.
Yeah. Well, you have some pretty amazing shoes. So I'm grateful to be on. And I just wanted to share that I have a little free training for your audience, if you don't mind me sharing
that. Yeah, please do.
Yeah. So I have this training called Scared or Rich, 7 Practical Biz Tips to Help You Move Past Fear and Hit Your Mega Money Goals. And it's not just for entrepreneurs. You know, everyone will benefit from this mindset, money mindset work. So we'll have that on iHeartMyLife.com/so money.
All right. I will put that on our blog as well. And hopefully we'll get you some people your way. Thanks so much, Emily.
Thanks, Farnoosh. Thank you. It's been amazing.
To learn more about Emily, her website is iHeartMyLife.com or follow her on Twitter at iHeartMyLife now. And Emily is providing her audience with a special offer. Head over to iHeartMyLife.com/so money to get her Scared or Rich 7 Practical Biz Tips to Move Past Fear and Hit Your Mega Money Goals. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. And I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.